Welcome to the Fear of Anything podcast. We have a very special episode today because we have filling in for Devon, Paps, because Paps is away filling in for Devon. It's very uncomfortable scheduling on our part, but yeah, I think we're very happy to have the stand-ins.
Are we all out of sync, are we?
I think so, yes.
So my job today is just to act confused and chat absolute mac for a good hour straight.
Pretend to be somebody else. Okay.
Nice.
So hang on a minute. It was meant to be Devon doing the welcome, was it?
No.
All right, you're just making it up. Making it up.
It's called being fun.
Just making it up for laughs, yeah.
We actually have a very special episode today because this review is actually going to be an interview.
Yes.
Well, because we have a creative in our midst and we are reviewing the book, What's Behind My Name. So, Trinity, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
This is a very special day, isn't it?
Yeah, good to be back.
Not only because Trinity's on our podcast again, she's featured several times before, but not for this kind of reason. But we have a published author in our midst.
Yeah, I'm now a published author.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're very excited about this. Let's see what questions we have here, and we're on with our interview.
And now it's time for book assignment chatting.
Yeah.
Okay, so who's going first with the questions then?
I'll ask the first one if I may.
Yeah, go on then. Off you go, Ford. Mm.
So, Trinity, for those of the listeners who haven't read your book yet, what's it about?
So, I struggled to find a good way to explain it. But, yeah, I tend to say that it's a story of an innocent teenage girl who writes in her diary and hopes to express herself in a new way. In her diary, she tells her life story from when she was born to where she is when writing in her diary. She expresses the adventures, the struggles, and the milestones that she's been through.
I think that very much covers it, doesn't it? Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
So from my memory, I believe you have written other stories in the past, haven't you? And but this is probably your biggest enterprise, would you call it that, in the form of a novella. How do you feel it's compared to writing a novella like this to one of your shorter outings?
I think I knew from right at the start of when I started to write this book that it was going to be bigger and better than anything I've written before.
Mm-hmm.
And although it's a novella, which is considered quite a small book, it's still a lot bigger than my old 10-page stories that I used to do. I wrote as a kid. But yeah, from the start, I was like really excited to write it all and finish it. And I always knew where I wanted the book to end as well. So what I had at the end of the book was always where it's supposed to end.
Very good.
And yeah, I even made a New Year's resolution this year that I would publish this book.
Wow.
So yeah, I was very pleased when I actually managed to do it.
Kept it from me anyway. I don't know if anybody else knew that you had this project ongoing. I think we'll be talking about that in a moment, aren't we? Okay, thank you.
Let's go.
If I may ask the next one, we would like to know if you had a target audience for this book, and if there's anyone in particular the book is aimed at.
So it's not really aimed particularly at anyone. It's kind of aimed at anyone, really. There are parts that might be hard for preteens to understand and things like that, but I think anybody would benefit from reading it.
That's interesting, yeah. I was wondering what kind of made you want to write and fiction in particular?
That's a good question. I think the reason why I like writing in the first place is because I find it a way to express myself. There are parts through this book that are just generally thoughts that I've had in my personal life through the years, but I wanted to write them down as a way of like processing it even further in my mind, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also like writing fiction generally because I like the idea that anything can happen and it doesn't have to be factually correct. Within the last year or so, I've been listening to some of the classic Enid Blyton books. I don't know if anybody's heard of her. She's wrote a lot of like fantasy fiction stories with pixies and fairies and talking rabbits and stuff. So which is quite different to what I write, what this book is about. But when I've listened to them, then I've got really, really inspired by it and everything. And yeah, at the start of this book, when I first started writing it, I used to be so fixated on trying to get all the details extremely correct. But as I carried on, I realised it was just taking all the fun out of it. So, like, as time's gone on, I've just, like, became less bothered about it being, like, really correct kind of thing and just done what I wanted to do. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough, yeah. I think that really comes over, definitely, yeah. Okay, and so how long did this process take? You say you decided at the beginning of this year to 2023 that you were going to get this thing finished. When do you think, can you remember back how long it's been from start to finish?
So, fun fact, I started it when I was 13.
Oh, wow.
So,
but you haven't been doing it constantly, have you? No, you kind of put it away for a little while, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been like on and off. When I first started it, I would try and work on it like after school some days and stuff when I was 13 and that. But then as I got into like doing exams and college and stuff, then I kind of only worked on it during the summer holidays and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, throughout the whole like 10 years,
wow.
It's been like on and off until recently, probably like a year ago, a year and a half ago, where I like set aside a time every day to do some writing. And
excellent.
Yeah. And that's how I've kind of managed to finish it off.
Good stuff.
Yeah. What drew you to the darker elements of the story? Because a lot of it is quite dark. It does mention depression quite a lot.
Yeah.
And obviously you can tell that the main character of the story is going through a very, very rough time. And obviously she internalizes and explains her thoughts quite vividly, I thought.
Yeah. I'm not sure what originally gave me the idea, because I was only like 13 at the time. But I think a lot of the darker side of things, I didn't totally understand myself when I was that age, like the mention of drugs and things like that.
Yep.
But I knew I wanted them there. But as I got older and kept on working on it and editing the book, the more I understood it from just life experiences and stuff. And I guess I just wanted to include things that I personally don't think people talk about very much, like the reality of drug abuse and homelessness and bullying and disabilities and so on.
Yeah.
I think people shy away too easily from these subjects, and they seem to make it feel like a bad thing to mention these things. And I really don't think that's the way forward. So I just wanted to like mention these things and realize that it is a reality of some people. People do go through these things,
yeah.
And wanted to make it personal like that kind of thing.
Yeah. You say about the personal nature of it all. Obviously, for those who don't know, the story is written in a diary. You read it as a diary entry situation. So why did you choose to write it in that epistolary format?
I think I've always enjoyed writing in more creative styles. Like, I remember lots of times in school or college, my English teachers would be impressed because I would do what they'd asked me to do, but with my own little twist. And like, for example, at college in my English lessons, I remember we had to write about something futuristic, like aliens coming to land on Earth or something like that. And we could choose what format we wanted to write it in. And I think the tutor was expecting either a story or a newspaper or something like that. But I decided to write it from a character's point of view, writing letters to his family.
And
I remember my tutor being like quite impressed with that I even thought of that kind of being a thing. So yeah, that's like an example. But I guess I've always liked making the book feel more personal as well, like you already said. I also do always prefer to write in first person as well. I struggle to write in like third person. So yeah.
Very good.
I know you said earlier that you kind of had the end of the story in mind when you first started it. You always had that vision. But did you know how you wanted the story to progress from start to finish and through the middle beforehand? Or did it kind of come to you as you went along and you had to work out how you got from the beginning to the end as you went?
Yeah, so I think it was a bit of both. I think a lot of it towards the beginning, I think I had like milestones that I knew that I wanted the character to go through, but it was kind of connecting them and like the middle bits between them and like what would happen to get her to that point in her life kind of thing that I would try and work out along the way. And yeah, them bits were hard to think of. sometimes there was quite a lot of time I got writer's block because I just like, I knew where I wanted to be, but then I couldn't figure out how to get there.
Yeah.
Very good. Interesting. Thank you. So I noticed, well, I'm going to have to be honest with you, I'm not being a great reader myself. I did download the audio version, which Audible version, which I think we've come to talk to probably before we finish. Which was, I thought, by the way, was excellently well read by Chloe Janine. Is that how you pronounce her surname?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, really did enjoy hearing her add the kind of, I think she did a good job of adding the emotion to the writing as well. So I can see why you chose her to be your narrator. But what struck me the most probably, well, my first thoughts was, I was listening to it, was how you've featured greatly on names as you've been writing the book. People's names seem to be quite important, not least of course in the title, because the title is What's in My Name. Is that right? Yeah, it's What's Behind My Name. What's Behind My Name. So you seem to put great play on the characters' names, and I wonder how much thoughts did you give to that, and what's your process of choosing your characters' names. I know in my very, very limited experience of doing a little bit of, not novels or anything, but a little bit of imaginary writing, I really find it hard to think of, like, what about when you're choosing a character's name in a computer game, you know, when you're setting up a character and things like that? Really, you could just have a block, don't you? But literally, I'll just pull a few out. You had Eleanor and Arnold, the first couple who I think your character meets, and Dr. Miller. I think Amelia is a close friend of your main character. Another person, Kelly, I think, who befriends her later. And then is it Reuben, who's not such a nice character at the end?
Yeah, at the end.
Yeah. So those are just some that jumped out at me. So the question is, how did you decide on the name of the book? What gave you the idea for the title? And how did you come by the characters' names within it?
Yeah, so I can't really remember how I came up with the name of the book, because I think I've had the name of the book since the beginning, so like 10 years ago. But I think I just wanted a title that would draw you towards the book.
Okay.
And I knew that I wanted it to be a story about the background or where the character comes from and things like that. So I guess like kind of a bit of wordplay kind of thing, like what's behind her name, so kind of thing, what's happened in her life that's made her who she is, kind of thing.
Very good.
So yeah, I guess like that's for the title, but then yeah, with the characters' names, then I always struggle with coming up with names as well. I remember when I was younger and I'd be playing Sims, and then another Sims born into the family. And I would always ask Ford, what shall I name my character? Because Ford used to be really good at coming up with names.
Really?
But yeah, and I used to be rubbish at it. So this time with the book, then for all of the names, I wanted them to be normal names, in quotation marks, but also unique names at the same time. Like, I wanted them to be ones that you don't hear all the time, but also names that you've, like, have heard of. So, like Amelia, it's a name that everybody's heard of, but it's not one that you hear, like, all the time kind of thing. So, yeah, I kind of wanted it like that. But then more specifically, I kind of gave more thought into Arnold. I wanted his name to be quite, like, a traditional name and quite a stubborn kind of name as well for his character. So yeah, I tried to like work his name around his character, what I felt would portray it, kind of thing. And yeah, same for Kelly as well. Kelly's quite a nice, kind character, and for me personally, I found Kelly a quite nice name.
Yeah.
But yeah, how I find all these names to start with, I think I generally just go on to Google and type in baby names.
Yeah, good idea.
And just like search baby names, and then like or girl baby names or boy baby names, and yeah, you get like a whole massive list to just go through.
It's funny you should say that, because as you were answering my question, I was thinking it's interesting, isn't it, that when it, well, some of us have been in the position of choosing names for children, our own children. You do word associate with people from your own experience and your own life. So I guess there's an element to that as well. Like, you know, if you've got a good experience or you've got a friendly character and you've got a good experience of somebody called Eleanor, then you're going to give your friendly character a name that brings happy thoughts, I suppose. And the same with the characters who aren't so nice, I guess. So if you're a friend of Trinity's and your name is Arnold or Reuben, then you know what she really thinks about you. Oh dear, I hope I haven't got you into trouble. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, so obviously books generally have a structure, don't they? A middle, beginning and end or whatever. Did you give much thought to the chapter structures? What's within each diary entry?
Okay, so I think what people might be referring to is how at the beginning of every diary entry, there's a paragraph, which is like a now paragraph. It's like as she's writing it now kind of thing. But then the next paragraph underneath that continues to carry on the story. Yeah, I quite liked how I think some people find that confusing, which I get. But at the same time, that's one of the things that I quite like about the book. It's kind of got them two dimensions, I suppose, like time dimensions. And yeah, in the Kindle, not so much in Audible, but yeah, in the Kindle version, you can tell when the story part of it carries on by the first letter is bigger. It's in a bigger font kind of thing. So that's kind of to represent this is now carrying on the story. But then before that is kind of in present time.
Got you. Yeah. But yeah. Interesting that. Nice device.
I have heard people find it confusing which I understand. But yeah.
I thought it was relatively straightforward, but fair enough.
Cool. I think I have done a review on your Amazon website. Yeah. And I think I alluded to that, didn't I, in my review? Can you remember?
Yeah.
I said I struggled at the beginning to get used to that. But once I'd got into it, I really did then understand it and see how you were doing it. And it became much easier. And I got on board with it. Definitely. The chapter structure at the beginning for me was difficult. Within two or three, four chapters, maybe I go, oh, okay. Yeah, I now am on board, I guess is the right way of putting it. Yeah, yeah.
Let's go.
It might just be because obviously all of us are quite spiritual and we're on a spiritual podcast. And I think it does mention early on, it mentions God in the book, but it kind of drops that for the rest of the book. But obviously, there's still spiritual elements and there's still obviously the healing process for Sophie.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I was thinking, is it Sophia? Always with that. So, is that your intention? Did you always want there to be spiritual elements in it, or did you kind of was it mentioned less after the initial mention of God on purpose, or what was?
Yeah, so I kind of wanted there to be a little bit of hint to it in general. Yeah, I didn't want it to overpower the tone of the book, but then I wanted it to be hinted in there somewhere kind of thing. I think it's mentioned at the beginning and then slightly vaguely mentioned at the very end as well. So yeah, I quite liked how it was kind of at the beginning and at the end kind of thing. But yeah.
Oh, very good. That's a good answer. Thank you, Trin. What also struck me was a level of detail in some of the some of the writing, which there's a lot that kind of connects with emotions and feelings and everything else that's going on within the person's, within Sophie's experiences. But you're also very good at describing locations and the details on, like, for example, when she's in London and the seeing the soldiers and all that sort of thing. I wondered what your research process was. Did you have to spend a lot of time looking into some of those details? How did you find that?
So, yeah. I think, as I said earlier, when I first started writing the book, I was trying to get all the details accurate.
Oh yes, yeah, yeah.
So at that time, which was when I was writing the London part, I did spend quite a lot of time, I think, kind of Googling, like, oh, what are the rough areas of London, and going on like that, and that kind of thing. Yeah, and also, like, I think with the soldiers thing, I think, and with the Queen and that whole parade situation, I wanted the readers to know exactly what was going on.
Yeah,
but I didn't want Sophie to know what was going on.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, because you don't even mention who this person, who obviously for us the reader, we see the Queen.
The Queen,
we're presuming it's the Queen, but she's got no clue, has she? Yeah,
yeah, she has no clue. Yeah. Because obviously she wouldn't have like grown up about knowing it.
She wouldn't have
gone to school or whatever. She was like thoroughly relying on her mum to tell her. And about all these different things. So I kind of, I guess that's why I kind of wanted, I put them extra details in, because I wanted to double make sure that, like, the readers knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And I do remember, like, Googling the soldiers, can't remember what they're called now, but they're called, like, a weird name, aren't they?
Oh, it's called a bearskin or a busby. Which soldiers wear the busby? Busbies are used by the just has different regiments. Anyway,
the soldiers.
There we are, getting caught up on the detail again.
Details.
Too much detail.
So I remember Googling what these soldiers and looking at the pictures of them and trying to describe them in like minute detail and things like that.
I know you veered away from that level of detail later in the writing, but I really enjoyed those details as well. So I commended it in my thinking about it. I think very good. Yeah. But obviously it's different styling, and it's interesting how over your 9 year or 10 year writing process your focus shifted. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, I guess my focus shifted more onto emotional detail rather than like
that came in more like towards the end, didn't it?
Actual detail,
probably because you were getting more in touch with your own emotions as a person. Good answer, thank
probably
you
was,
I was wondering, did you have like as I was reading through, I was thinking, did you have a favorite line or a favorite scene when you were writing the book?
There have quite a few different scenes that I really like more over any others. In particular, like when Sophie and her mum running over the bridge to go into like the better part of London. And so I really like that scene. And like all the way from at the beginning of that scene where I think it says, our hunger and worries lifted off our shoulders and went into the wind. Something along them lines. And all the way up to that whole thing, all the way up to when they're snuggled up next to it, snuggled up next to the Victorian lamppost as well. Sophie describing her her mum's face and her body and what that's acting like now compared to throughout the day when she was happy, and how like her mum's just like a cold-hearted robot now kind of thing, and she's like shutting down kind of thing. I really enjoyed all that.
Yeah, it was very powerful, that bit.
Also, I like when Sophie drinks clean water for the first time, just like that little bit when she's laying in that bed. I really like that, because I guess it's like not always about the big things, it's like the small things as well. And then when Sophie and Amelia are in the canteen at school on their first day as well. That whole first day of the school, I kind of related it from my own experiences at school as well.
Okay.
So when they're on about like, really loud in the canteen, you can't even hear the person next to you. Like, I remember that myself in the canteen at school. And rushing through the corridors and but getting battered about by all the bigger kids and that's all like things that I took from like my experiences from school and that. But then the last scene that I really liked was the what happened at the very end when Sophie gets beat up by Ruben and his friends. Yeah, I personally found that quite powerful, especially how on the audible version, how Cleo expresses it with her voice as well. Yeah. You can hear in Cleo's voice, she gets really emotional.
She does,
expressing it. And yeah, I find that very moving.
Very good.
There's lots of different parts and scenes in that I really like.
If I may ask, I don't know if it's a secret and will be later revealed, but what happens to the characters after the book ends?
That would be spoilers, wouldn't it? Yeah. Some of the people listening to this won't know how the book ends as it is now, but we're intrigued to know what happens next, aren't we?
Does anybody else have any guesses about what happens next?
I do have some thoughts, yeah. Some thoughts about that.
Do you want to share?
Well, I think a sequel will have to include two characters who have disappeared. One is your grandmother, her grandmother, not your grandmother, okay. Her grandmother.
Yeah, her grandmother, yeah.
Who was only presumed dead. I think she's going to reemerge. Uh-huh. And of course, everybody wants to know where her mum's gone.
Yeah.
We are in spoilers now, aren't we? Yeah,
yeah, spoiler alert.
But both of those two characters have disappeared. And I was itching, and I was watching the end of the book approaching, thinking, well, where's mum going to appear again, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, that's got to be considered in any kind of sequel.
Yeah.
I don't want, it might be bad news. It doesn't have to be a good news re-merging. But, and also, I wondered if there's any sway in more of the dad's backstory, which I think is another question we were going to ask you, wasn't it, about other characters.
Yeah.
I think for me, the next book has to devolve into a sci-fi. She gets abducted.
How did I know that was coming?
By aliens, yeah.
Everything has to be sci-fi with you.
Uh-huh. Across the genres, yeah.
And it turns from diary entries into, I don't know, SOS messages or something like that.
Very good.
Perfect.
There you go. If you want any writing advisors there, Trin, you've got
No.
You don't have to reveal your thoughts on that if you don't want to. Yeah.
I guess we'll find out in the next book.
Let's hope so.
Does Devon have any thoughts on that?
I think she'll find her mother again, and she'll work very hard using her newfound education to earn enough money to house her mother and get her mother a better life as well.
Mm. Oh,
cool. I find it interesting that nobody's mentioned Eleanor.
Yes, of course. Eleanor disappeared, didn't she, out of the story? And she seemed disappointed that she couldn't reconnect with Eleanor, didn't she?
Yeah.
Because, Mother disappears quite soon in the story, doesn't she? But the time spent with Eleanor seems great more. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm going to be controversial now. And they do say this, that the writer's story is not always the reader's story.
Yeah.
You can make your own, I don't think the mother was all that awfully good. Not such a loving mother that Eleanor thinks she was. Not Eleanor, Sophie thinks she was. I think we're viewing her mother through her own rose-tinted glasses. There's a few things why I say that. Would you really, no matter, what your situation and circumstances are, would you really let your 9-year-old take drugs or chemicals that are not good for you? And the whole thing about mother always said we shouldn't go across the other side of the bridge, and that the homeless shelters don't allow you in unless you've got children. Yeah. I was thinking, that sounds like a story that the mother has tried to tell the daughter.
But it's not true,
That's not true, just to kind of like a self-preservation thing, almost as if she doesn't want the authorities to know that Sophie exists, so that's why she's keeping away from all those kind of official bodies that would be able to help them. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, a few times I was listening, I was thinking, why didn't you just go up for adoption? I know that would mean being taken away from your parent, but still...
Or to a food bank, or to a, there is social service help for people in that situation, unless there's something going on that we don't know and Sophie doesn't know, as the writer rather. Because Sophie's writing from her perspective, isn't she?
Mm. Yeah.
So she only knows what her mother told her.
obviously the mother's kind of not all there, is she? So no, to be fair, it could be malicious or it could just be, I don't know.
Yeah.
The drug stalking.
There's a line that Sophie does say, "For once, my mother was wrong." You know, when you take the journey over the bridge. I say you as if it was you, but I know it's your character. And there's another line I did note down that at the end of chapter 6, I think it was, after she gets lost, "I knew she would protect me with her life. I'm just alone." And I thought, you are on your own now, aren't you? And and can we really be sure that the mother would have did her mama ever come and look for her again? You know, and all those, or was she dead when she left her? We don't know, do we? She might have been dead when she left because she was asleep, wasn't she? Anyway, those are just some of my rambling thoughts on what isn't said in the book. Anyway, yeah,
let's go. Yeah, it's interesting. Let's go.
Well, should we get back to the what we thought we'd ask you? Yeah,
can do.
It kind of connects to the question. Did Devin just ask about what happens after the story ends?
Okay. My answer to that is we'll have to see in the next
Wait and see. Yeah. Who's next with a question? Is it
you?
I've said too much. You go forward with the next one.
Oh, I was all ready to ask this. Okay, fine.
Ask two then.
But no. if someone else wanted to start writing, is there any advice that you'd give them?
So yeah, I would just tell them to just start writing. I've seen lots of people asking how do they become a writer or what do they need to know to become a writer. But I thoroughly believe that all you need is your mind and a laptop, or even just your phone or a pen and paper. I think don't worry about being perfect to start off with. Just write your thoughts and ideas down and the rest will just flow, because that's all I've ever done. And I've been able to publish a book. So
wow.
I don't think you need to go to college and like study writing or like literacy and all that kind of thing. Don't think you need to do that. I suppose you don't even need to know how to write or type. You could get somebody to like translate it for you, to like write it down for you. So yeah, just go for it.
Very good advice, that. Yeah. So I've given a few thoughts of mine on, and you might call it critique, I suppose is the right word, but have you had any other people give praise or criticism? How have you been able to respond to what others have said about your writing?
Yeah,
that's a difficult question to answer, probably. Yeah,
quite a hard one, yeah.
Yeah.
I think kind of the most touching praise I've kind of received is that people can't wait to hear more, that they are looking forward to seeing if there will be a sequel. And yeah, that just kind of motivates me and inspires me even more to carry on and do more. So yeah,
it's great.
It's really touching that like people actually like what I've written and yeah, that they want to see more from these characters. Yeah.
Cool. I guess in terms of relating to the reader again, is there any in particular, I guess, a message or a lesson that you would want to your readers to take away from the story, or that you want to impart into the reader?
So yeah, the whole book is basically about Sophie learning to understand the world. So there are many lessons throughout the whole book. Sophie constantly wants everyone to treat everybody the same, no matter what. For example, she doesn't like how Eleanor feels like she has to cover herself up, because that's what Arnold wants her to do. And when Eleanor does do what she wants, then there are physical consequences. But I think the main thing that I would like the reader to take away from it is to never give up. If anybody puts you down in any way, then don't listen to them. You're the only one in control of what you achieve, not anybody else. And I know it feels extremely tough sometimes, but you can do anything if you put your mind to it. Good. So just keep going.
Well, good advice. Well done. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Definitely those points come across as a story comes towards its conclusion. We really see that happening, don't we? Yeah.
If you could go back and do it again, I wondered, would you do anything different in the way, I don't know, you write, the process you've written?
Oh, I'm not sure. yeah, sure.
I guess.
Maybe,
I was thinking about that's a good question that Ford's asking. Yeah. But you could say because the writing process spanned many years, you must have revisited the earlier chapters and thought, oh, do I really want to alter that in any way, or does it carry on in the flow? Did that happen at all, or is that linked to the question that Ford's just asked?
Yeah, so I suppose like I have like recently like gone over it again kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there were times where I went back to the beginning and I did take some things out, and because me older now found them cringy to say, or or like just too like childish to say kind of thing,
right? Okay.
Things like that. So I guess I kind of have already kind of gone back to write it again. But yeah, they're only like little bits that I kind of changed about them, just like one liners kind of thing. But yeah, sometimes I think now sometimes I still like listen back to it or read back to it and think, oh, should I have kept that in? Should I not have? But yeah, it's out now. So
Well, I think you've done a very credible job. It's a good, good.
Thank you.
We'll be coming towards the end of the moment of giving you our final thoughts and review.
And also, kind of going back to my question before about what happens to the characters after the book ends. But have you ever actually considered writing a spin-off perspective of side characters in the book, like running alongside the timeline of this book? And if not, what's next for you?
Yeah, very good thought.
I think you're a mind reader.
Oh, oh dear.
Yes.
Okay, yes is the answer. Yeah, no, I'd never thought about that, side characters, because I questioned some of the what happened to some of the missing characters that disappear from the story. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah
What happened to them?
So I am actually in the middle now of writing the next one, which I'm really enjoying, which is like I don't know how many pages I've wrote of it so far. Probably at least like 20 pages of it so far.
Wow.
But yeah, it's still a long, long way to go. This next book might even be longer than this one. So
very good.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm really excited about that.
So you're saying the mother got abducted by from aliens.
and the grandmother, yeah. And Eleanor, yeah. All the people who disappeared from her life.
Yeah, they're all over the place in London, aren't they?
They're living on a different planet. Yeah.
You've seen Doctor Who, haven't you? They're all in London.
Very good.
Cool.
So, yeah, I have thought about that, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for answering our questions. Devon, perhaps, did you have any final thoughts you wanted to lay on us?
I think I've alluded to all my kind of appraisal of it, if you like, because one of the questions was, you know, how do you receive praise, touching praise or criticism? It's not easy, is it? Especially when you're a family member as well. And I've just really applaud you for what you've achieved here. As I say, I've commented that I found a difficult beginning, but I warmed to it. I am excited about what's next. I was intrigued and gripped by the story as it evolved, you know. And I think one of the things I would say that really changed my approach to reading it or listening to it was the understanding that everything that was being written or had been written was through the eyes of ultimately a 15-year-old. So the world was a very different place. And then once I got my head around that, the reading of it was a much easier process and a much more enjoyable experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, yeah, that's my kind of concluding thoughts on it. And I really look forward to whatever it is next. But what I would say, don't rush it. Whatever you do next with this story and these characters, spend time with them. I'm not an expert on these things, but I would really encourage you to just spend time with them. Don't have to spend 9 years or 10 years, but, don't rush the story, because I'm sure it will be beneficial from it'll benefit from a contemplative next instalment.
That's cool then. Thank you.
I wonder if there's any way of you being able to forward a link to this podcast to your narrator, maybe. Be interesting. I don't know if there's any connection between the two of you, but
Yeah, I'd
want to pass on my thanks, our thanks, I think, all of us who have listened to the audible version. I really want to say thank you to Cleo for doing such a great job of what she did with your writing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll try and pass it on to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, then. So, how many epistolary entries out of 10 do you give it?
Wow. What a question.
Do we just go first? Yeah. I can go first.
Go on then. Yeah, you go first, Devin.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay.
I think it was very enjoyable. I think it was very expressive. It was interesting, as Dad said, that it's from a interesting perspective of a diary entry from a 15-year-old girl. Obviously, you've gone through quite a lot. So the point of view from what you're reading is very different to what you may be expecting. And I do agree that if you do have that, if you go in with that understanding, it makes it a lot better as well. But then I also can see what you mentioned before, Trin, about some of the maybe cliche type things that were in there that you're saying that you might have changed. And that just makes me excited for any future books that you have, that you can obviously see those types of things. And you're still developing as well as a writer. It's very it's exciting for the next ones, for sure.
Definitely.
That's cool. Yeah, thank you.
So you said 7 out of 10. Very good.
Yeah,
I was personally thinking around 7 as well. I thought you as the writer, clearly don't like London, do you?
No. No, I quite like London, actually.
Oh, do you actually? Oh, good.
Yes.
Yeah. I did wonder, though. There's not many good male characters, is there?
True. Good spot.
They're all a bit sucky. I don't know if that's a deliberate thing for you, or whether...
I don't think it was deliberate. But I guess as a 15-year-old or a 15-year-old
men are scary.
Men, you don't really come across like men that are kind to you, kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's only really your dad or your brothers and things like that that you really connect with, or family members. But just strangers or people at school or whatever, they kind of... they're not so kind.
It
wasn't intentional, but that's my say on it.
Fair enough. I definitely enjoyed it when I committed and sort of got into it, I suppose. Like Pap says, it took me a while to get into it, but I was actually really enjoying it by the end.
Did you listen to it on Audible?
Kindle.
You read it. That's cool.
I'm going to go a bit higher than that. I think for a first novel, for a first proper novel, I think you did a great job. The descriptions were brilliant in it. Definitely as you matured in your writing, as you matured as an author in your actual years, because it took a good while to write with all the other interruptions to life, I think it really shows, don't be put off if you're uncertain about the beginning. I think I would go probably 8.5. I think, it's up there for me. There's not many books that I really look forward to. In fact, I've just started listening to it again, and there's not many. I think if I had persevered with the Kindle version rather than switching to the Audible version, it would have been a can't put it down book for me.
That's cool then.
Yeah.
I did just think of a thing to mention, just for anybody who does consider reading it. I just wanted to add on that a big thing for me with this book was, as writing it, was I wanted it to be a kind of shorter story, because as like Dad's already said, and like as Ford is, me as well, I'm not a big reader. So I quite like just shorter books that grab your attention. And so that's kind of what I was going for. I've kind of had experiences with other local authors to me who I've reached out for advice, and they've kind of knocked me down because they've said, nobody would be interested in that short of a story and things like that. So. Wow. Knock me down like that. But I have written it short for people like us who who struggled to read, and that's why I was kind of important to get it on Audible as well, so people that even struggle to read short stories can listen to it instead.
So with that in mind, I'll just add that it's a runtime of 2 hours and 36 if you're going to listen to it on Audible. And I think the purchase price on Audible is about £5 something, £5.50, something like that. A worthwhile investment, I think, for definitely, you know, you'd spend more than that on going to the cinema, wouldn't you? So for a similar amount of time.
On Kindle, I think it's £4.99 as well.
Yeah. So I think we should support budding authors like yourself. So
Can I just ask
people to do that? Yeah.
Can I just ask Devon, where did you listen to it or read it from?
Audible.
Audible.
Yeah. Did you? You listened to it?
I listened to it. Yeah, it was easier for me to do when I'm obviously like driving to and from work and getting ready for work and that kind of thing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's cool.
Good. Yeah. Fabulous. Thank you for coming and being our special guest. And it's not even a episode that ends in a 0 or a 5. It's in the middle of that. Yeah.
I'm honored. So we're
very glad that you're able to join us on this wee review episode. I should pass over to Ford really to conclude. Sorry, I've jumped in there.
No, fair enough. Well, that about wraps up this episode. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Trinity Woodward, for coming in and talking about your book. I know Paps just said all that, but there you go.
Glad I could be here.
Yeah. So if you want to go and listen to or read what we've been talking about, search for What's Behind My Name by Trinity Woodward.
Nice. The Audible and the Kindle version both come up on Amazon, both together. So that's very, very easy to access.
Mm.
You can also type in Trinity Woodward as well, and then it comes up.
Let's set your next assignment and say farewell.
So for our next episode, Devon, do you have a little tease for us what that might be?
I couldn't possibly.
No tease.
Anything away.
Oh, you are a tease. Okay.
My cards are close to my chest.
Oh.
Fair enough. So for our next We Review episode, we have a film coming up, but in the descriptions down below in the video/podcast you're listening to, there'll be links to the poll for what film you would want us to review. So please do pop down there and help us out.
What are we thinking we might do, Ford? Going to tease us with that.
Okay. So we've got Soul, Apocalypse Now, Hunger Games, or Tron.
Yeah.
Those are your choices.
Bit of variety there, definitely.
Yeah, we've got a retro film. Yeah, Soul's pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of religious content that we could glean from that, I think.
Yeah, good point.
So do pop down there, help us choose what we're going
to
do.
We might soon have to remove Apocalypse Now off our pollie because it's been there for a long time and nobody wants it. So that might encourage people to vote for it. Don't take it away. I've been meaning to vote for it. Yeah.
Nice.
So, what a great film.
Take it as a hint.
It's fully rejected.
Yeah.
And now I'd like to review any of those, actually.
Well, again, thank you all for listening. I think we'll see you next time. That's it, I guess. We'll see you in a bit.